Hey guys, this is Joe. Today I want to introduce you to our partner Vanta. Achieving ISO 27001 or SOC 2 compliance can unlock major growth for your company and build customer trust, but the process can be time intense and costly. Vanta automates compliance, getting you audit ready quickly and saving up to 85% of associated costs. And Vanta scales with your business, helping you enter new markets. Join 7,000 global companies like Atlassian, Flow Health, and Quora that trust Vanta. Claim 20% off Vanta at vanta.com/startupradio. That's vanta.com, spelled vanta.com/startupradio.
Welcome to startuprad.io, your podcast and YouTube blog covering the German startup scene with news, interviews, and live events.
Hello and welcome everybody. This is Joe from startuprad.io, your startup podcast and YouTube blog from Germany. Today I would like to welcome a female founder. Finally, I'm trying to get as many female founders as I can, and I do have Andrea here. Hey, how you doing?
Hi, Joe. Fine, thank you. Thank you very much for having me here today.
Totally my pleasure. As the people who are watching this can already see, your company is called ActiTrax. Yes. Is that the right pronunciation?
Yeah, that's it.
And it's a biotech startup from the city I was born in, the city of Mainz. But we'll soon get into that. First, let us talk a little bit about who you are and what you did. And for everybody who's out there, I might tell them you're not only Andrea, you're also a professor at the University Clinic of Mainz. You also have your PhD and you've gotten a lot of awards. Wait, I was scanning through your CV and this is just some of the highlight scholarship of the German National Academic Foundation, Dagmar Eisner Research Award, University Mainz, Scholarship Kalkoff-Rose Foundation Award for Outstanding Qualified Junior Scientist, University of Mainz, Dermato-Oncology Award from the Society of Dermatological Research, winner of Business Plan Competition Science for Life, and I could go on. So that is pretty impressive. Can you tell us a little bit how you actually started out? Because my understanding is you studied medicine from the start, right?
Yeah, that's it. I'm a medical doctor by training, and I didn't want to be a researcher or a company founder in the very beginning. I just wanted to be a doctor. And at that time, it was really hard to get a job. And I applied for the job as a dermatologist, and I got, I got a place, but it was, I had to go to the lab in parallel. So they told me, okay, you can come, but we want you not only to be on the ward, but also to go and do some research. And I was not a very fan of that in the very beginning, but when you remember, or when you see that actually in dermatology, there are a lot of connections between the clinic and the research, it starts to get very interesting. And this is why I then did, in parallel to my clinical education, I did my my research, and then one came to the other, and yes, now I'm here and have founded a company.
Okay, so as the doctors usually are, they speak some very strange language. Dermatology, we may tell the audience that's skin doctor,
yes,
mostly.
Yes.
Yeah, very much simplified. And if you talk about the ward, that means that is the actual part where you treat the patients.
Yeah, that's it. Where the patients are either the outward patients that come only for a day or so on, or also the patients that are on that lie in the bed because they got a treatment or something like that.
Mm-hmm. I've seen, before we get into what you did as a doctor and how it got you to be a biotech entrepreneur, I've seen you studied at McGill University in Canada and in Zurich in Switzerland. I was wondering when I was reading this, are you into skiing?
Yes, I am. Nevertheless, my family would laugh now because they are much better than me. But I am into skiing, and I like skiing very much because it's also a family thing at our home. And yeah, Canada was a great experience because this is a complete other health system. But Montreal is a great city. And yeah, you could do a lot of things there in addition to working in the clinics.
Did you fall in love with the Montreal bagels?
Yeah, I like them very much because they are really sweeter than the normal bagels are because they are with honey. But I also like the poutine there, which is fries with sous of meat. This is also extraordinary, but really, and maple syrup. I love maple syrup since I worked in Canada.
I have to admit, I have never gotten into poutine, but I'm a big fan of maple syrup. Yeah. So are my boys now.
Yeah, it's really, I put it everywhere you can put it. it's really fantastic stuff.
Yes. But I do assume you also learned a lot there in the places, different working, different language.
Yeah.
How was it when you treated your first patient in Canada? To do it in English, were you scared out of your mind?
No, that's quite okay. With English, it was quite okay. I have to admit, I choose Canada and Montreal especially because normally I like much more to speak French. And I also can speak a lot better French than I can speak English. So I try to have both at the same time because my parents said you only get one, paid one excursion to the foreign countries. And so I choose Montreal because in my leisure time, I spoke French. At the clinic, I spoke English. And it was not that hard. I don't know why, but you read a lot of things also in English when you're doing your medical education. So perhaps it's like, yeah, a little bit accustomed. But I worked with kids there, and this was funny because they always said, you have to speak very slowly because she comes from the other end of the world. This was always what they did say when I started there with my English.
Okay. So now we know you studied abroad, you studied in Switzerland, you've been a skin doctor by training.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit now how this story develops into getting the technology, the treatment that your company does right now and is waiting? As you said, you're looking at the building for your first patient to start clinical trials. Can you take us a little bit along this journey?
Yeah, of course. First, I have to acknowledge that there is my colleague, Helmut Junoleit, who is a little bit the father of all this, too. He founded with me together, and he was my mentor in the very beginning in the lab. And if you are working in the lab, you see that there are things you can bring into the clinic to the patient, and you can bring also things from the patient back to the lab. So you call it from bench to bedside because this is this is a circle, so to say. And we worked with immune cells, and we tried to induce tolerance with a certain subgroup of immune cells that are cells that are located in our peripheral blood and that are naturally occurring in our peripheral blood. And we developed those cells, we activated them, and we saw that they are much more potent in conveying tolerance. So in decreasing overshooting immune responses. And an overshooting immune response is, for example, an allergy. So when you are in autoimmunity, so or in transplant rejection, those are all diseases that go ahead with overshooting immune responses. And we found the cell population that we activated, that we made much more potent, and where we saw in preclinical models that we are able to shut down this overshooting immune responses. And this was the first time when we said, okay, this works really good in preclinical models. Why shouldn't we go into the clinic and make a drug out of it? And normally you get funded for research with money that is enough for doing basic research, but that isn't enough to develop a company and to found a company. And so we applied for a grant from the Federal Ministry of Research and Education, because they have a program which is called GoBio and which enables you to take the steps and to have enough money to go to foundation of a company, because you have to do regulatory stuff which costs money. You have to do a lot of things that cost more money than you get by normal grants. And this was then the idea to try to develop a clinical trial and to try to found a company. And this was step by step. And I think with this activated regulatory cells, we are really able to treat patients that have those overshooting immune responses. And I don't know, we will start with something that is called graft versus host disease, and that is a severe side effect after stem cell transplantation in leukemia patients. And those will be our first clinical trial helping those patients after stem cell transplantation.
I do have some medical training being an EMT in the past, but I do believe for a lot of people, you could have say blah, blah, shaman, lama, ding, dong, and it would have been the same.
Try to make it quite comprehensible.
You did totally fine. Basically, let me try to dumb this down so even I would understand it.
Yeah.
Right now, you're waiting for the first patient who has leukemia, meaning blood cancer.
Yeah.
And basically, the chemotherapy erases most or all of the cells that produce blood. The patient gets a transplant.
Yeah.
And then there is the risk of the body rejecting it, overreacting, as you said. And your treatment can, for example, help those patients, or that is what you're currently working on.
Yeah, that's completely right. So this severe side effect, this transplant rejection, this occurs in nearly every second patient after stem cell transplantation, even though there are therapies to prevent. But they do not help in 100%. And we try to give the patients activated cells that dump down the immune, this transplant rejection. And so they won't get severe inflammation at their bodies. They won't die from this side effect. And this is what we try to do. Yeah.
Do you have any idea how much better it will get from 1 in 2, maybe to 1 in 3, 1 in 5?
Yeah, we hope that only at the moment every second patient will develop graft versus host disease and this transplant rejection, and we hope that only every fifth patient will get it, or they will get it in a much more moderate, you know. There are grades from 1 to 4, and 4 is really incredible, and 1 is really mild. And we try either to prevent it completely, or in a lot less patients, or to have a moderate form of transplant rejection. This would also be an option.
I see. And talking about
the point is, one important point. The stem cell transplantation is the only cure for leukemia patients. You have a lot of stuff, chemotherapies and so on, but stem cell transplantation is the only cure. And at the moment, only 10% of the patients that would need a stem cell transplantation get one. And this is because of this, not only you have to find a compatible donor first, that's for sure. But the second major hurdle or major challenge is indeed that they get this transplant rejection. And this is why only 10% worldwide get a stem cell transplantation. So if our therapy would prevent this transplant rejection, everyone who needs it would get it. And this is what we aim to.
How many leukemia patients are we talking every year here?
Every minute worldwide, someone is diagnosed with leukemia. from the very little kid to the very aged person. So there are several forms that are not life-threatening, but every minute someone worldwide. Yeah.
That makes thousands of patients. Yeah.
And we have, at the moment, we have about 50,000 transplants in Europe so far per year. Mm-hmm. And we could really increase this when our therapy would be a good one.
Okay, I see. So if you say right now 10% of the patients get transplant, if we have 50,000 each year, you could help somewhere additionally 300 to 500,000 somewhere in this area?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Ooh, that is quite a lot. And then we are only talking about Europe with a population of somewhere, let's say, rule of thumb, something like 500 million people.
Yeah, but the funny thing is even we are really per year you have around about 60 to 80,000 transplantations, and Europe is indeed the leader in that. So we have about 40 to 45,000 transplantations. In the US, you have about 20 to 25,000. And then comes China, and then comes the rest of the world. So we are quite, the market is quite localized in Europe and the US, to be honest.
I see. Nonetheless, that's a lot of people you could help with that, right?
Yeah. Definitely. And it is still not only leukemia you could treat with stem cell transplantation. I don't know whether you heard about those HIV patients, for example. There's one London patient and one Düsseldorf patient, so-called, and they had also a stem cell transplantation, and they were cured from HIV. And at the moment, you wouldn't give HIV patients a stem cell transplantation because of this severe side effect. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, if this is gone, you also have treatment options in this direction. So you can have, some other indications that could be treated or prevented with this treatment modality.
Mm-hmm. And my understanding is this is your, let's say, starting point, because with your approach, with the, how do you call it? Treatment of the, of those cells, how are those cells called?
So those are regulatory cells, and they are activated. So we activate them because, they normally do their job. But when you want to make them more potent and you want to give them kind of a turbo or booster or something like that, you can activate them. And this is a process which is also very, very fast. So it's an ultra-fast manufacturing process. You get the cells, you isolate them, you activate them, and you give them back. It's within 24 hours. Normally, cell therapies need about 3 to 6 weeks to be applicable. But this is not beneficial for patients who are really ill. So the most precious thing is time for them. And so our ultra-fast approach is really, I think, beneficial for the patients.
I see. That's very, very interesting. My understanding is that is your starting point, like leukemia, stem cell transplants, maybe HIV patients, but also like autoimmune diseases and much more is theoretically at least possible with this approach.
Yeah, that's it. You could transfer it to every disease that is associated with those overshooting immune responses. So. Exactly.
I'm a professor of medicine. What else is out there?
Yeah. For example, if you name one disease, could be, for example, multiple sclerosis, which is also a very high impact disease. You could also go with autoimmune diseases of the skin. But I think there are several possibilities. But I think. Everything is in direction overshooting immune responses. And this is also severe allergy syndromes or something like that. But therefore, we still have to develop or we still have to do preclinical data and so on. So this is always the steps you have to do. You have to have an idea, then you have to do some basic research, then you have to do some preclinical work, and then you have to discuss with the regulatory authorities, and then you can probably enter into a clinical trial. And
before we get into the actual startup process for you, I had a question. Yes, I was wondering where we are right now in this state, because if somebody out there has leukemia, this is not an available treatment right now. No. As we said, yeah. You're waiting for the very first patient here. So this is really, really very early stage.
Yeah, it's quite, it's at the moment is really a clinical trial with some patients to look for safety. And this is always the first step. And if we are good at safety, then we can do the next step with some more patients, 100 or something like that, 70 to 100 patients to prove efficacy. So to show that really our cells do what they have to do. And then mm-hmm. you have to go for market approval. But this will completely right. This will take another 2 to 3 years. And this is, always remarkable that this all takes this time, but it's like that. Mm-hmm. It's for the safety of the patients, on the other hand. So it has a reason that it takes time.
It totally makes sense. Now that people, including me, even understand what you're doing. When we talked before this interview, that was very, very interesting, because one of the forces for you founding your startup, your biggest supporters to go do a biotech startup, have actually been your kids.
Yeah, that's it. It was really a big step. So I started as a doctor. I did a lot of research, and when this came up that I had the possibility to found the company with my colleague, I was really hesitating, because I like to be a doctor, I have to say. I really like my patients and my job. I'm in the oncology, dealing with skin cancers. I was in the oncology dealing with skin cancers. I really was a fan of that. And my kids said, okay, but you can make your therapy available to a lot more patients than if you stay at the ward or in the clinics and do a little bit of basic research. And they told me, if it doesn't work, you have had a really good experience and you learned a lot, and you can still do other things after that. And so it was like they didn't see this they wouldn't fear it. So, and they said, try it. And only if you try it, you can see what happens. And so, yes, we discussed it a lot at our dinner table in the evenings. And, they said, try it. And, I think, that was really good.
Good idea.
Help. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just to tease you here a tiny bit, how much do you think it is owned by your kids or like it much more to say, oh, my mom is a biotech entrepreneur than, oh, my mom is a doctor? Isn't it a little bit fancier?
Yeah, I think it depends whom you would ask. I think my son is in this direction, yes, and I think my daughter is more. She is quite neutral to that, but I think it's still both, because as I'm doing clinical trials, I'm still training my medical brain, so to say, and I have to bring in my knowledge, because I'm also responsible for the clinical trial and the building up of the clinical trials, and so it's quite helpful that I'm a doctor. But yeah, it's so when, in the very beginning, they were really proud to say, yeah, we have now an entrepreneur in our family.
That is good. The only little downside, when you founded the startup, you told me before, some of your patients have been very sad when you left their treatment in order to found a company. Yeah. Don't worry, another doctor took over. It's just they missed you as a person, right?
We have enough really good doctors here, and they are also really nice persons and people, but it's always yeah, it's nice when you have such good feedback from your patients that they are glad that you found a company, because they also told me that's a good idea to go the next step, because you were a doctor, you did research, and now the next step is to develop medications or therapies. But they were sad, and that was nice feedback. I was happy.
That is good. Always what makes you happy. So usually we start now with the next steps. I think we have been there very much already. So you're waiting for your first patient and 2 to 3 years until this treatment gets more available.
Hopefully, yes.
Hopefully, okay. Yeah. So I do believe this will not be the last interview with you. I really enjoy that here. And also, most people will listen to this interview. We may tell the audience that you are here, the classical one wearing the hoodie. And then I said, oh, you're really classic here. You're wearing a hoodie as an entrepreneur. And you told me, oh, I prefer that over more formal clothing.
Yeah, it's like that, really. I like my doctor coat or wearing a hoodie. So it's my preference. Yeah.
Ah, okay, I see. For the people out there who have heard it and who may have a few millions to invest, are you open to talk to investors?
Yeah, for sure. We really need a Series B funding in a few months, because we have now, when we finished our phase one clinical trial, we want to do the next step to go into the phase 2-3 clinical trial until market approval. And therefore, we need the next fundraising. So we are really actually open and already discuss with investors. We are happy for anyone who wants to do good things and to invest in our company, helping to build up this idea. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Everybody who's listening to this or watching this, down here in the show notes, there will be a link either to your personal LinkedIn profile or to the company's website. So both should work. Unless you're sick.
Yeah.
Personal experience. Yeah, we've both been going through the flu time here in Germany. Are you also looking for talent, meaning people to hire?
Yeah, actually, yes, because at the moment we have few people who do the manufacturing on the one hand and research on the other hand. I think in the next fundraising or in the next round, we will have to enlarge our team as well as the manufacturing mm-hmm. side, but also at the researcher side, because we are, as I told, we are developing a new product pipeline, and we always need people that help us to do so.
Mm-hmm. And for everybody who's now interested, again, go down here in the show notes. There will be a link to your company website and your career website.
Yeah.
Andrea, it has been very much a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you.
Best of luck for first the clinical trials, secondly, the fundraising, and thirdly, all of your patients.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure for me.
Totally my pleasure. Have a good day, and let us know when your Series B funding rolls in.
For sure.
Thank you very much.
Ciao. Thanks for having me. Ciao.
Have a good day. Bye-bye.
That's all, folks. Find more news, streams, events, and interviews at www.startuprad.io. Remember, sharing is caring.